you know, it was in the air. Who will be the next gurus? And so what Prabhupada did was, because the first part was then, Prabhupada wasn't able anymore to give names, chant on beads, and all these other things. And some of these things had already been done. He had already had people chanting on beads a long time ago. That was already done. So he just said, so now what we'll do is I'll name some people and I will have them do the initiations on my behalf. And Tamal Krishna says, oh, that's a Ritvik. Prabhupada says, yeah, like officiating guru. He picks the name, chants on the beads, but he does it on my behalf. Because he said that's etiquette. In the presence of the spiritual master, one doesn't take disciples. But then when he was, then in the future, they will be their own disciples. Meaning after, because nobody wanted to talk about when Prabhupada's not here, you know? He's just someone. Because the idea was somehow, well, he wasn't going to disappear. So there was a little reluctance to talk about the whole thing. So the conversation seems to be a little disjointed only because of the kind of delicate nature of the thing. So what Prabhupada did, but then he made it quite clear, and I don't want to get into a line-by-line exegesis of this conversation. I mean, the first time I had got this tape, the people were thinking it had been doctored by the GBC. You know, that it, because, well, we'll get back to that. But anyway, it had been because the background of the sound background changed. Then later I got a clear tape. And there was people were publishing papers saying that the GBC had doctored it and you could tell it to cut things out because the background noise changed. Then I got a clear copy from the archives. And there was a fan in the room that somebody was turning on and off or was going on and off. And that was the background noise, you know. I mean, so many different conspiracy theories came out of this. But it seemed to me that this is what Prabhupada did. You know, the way Mahavishnu glances at material nature, you know, from a distance. Prabhupada named people with the idea that people wanted to know who's going to be authorized. He named people, but he did it in such a way, precisely so he didn't say, these are my, you know, chosen successors. He said, they can do, others can do. And if you look at the conversation, it's conditional. Who is a guru? Not the ones that Prabhupada named. He who understands the orders of his spiritual master, he is spiritual master. That's all.
He said that in that context.
In that context, yeah. He who understands the conversation talked about that, about gurus, then it talked about translation. Then in the end, Prabhupada goes back and summarizes. And he gives that. He who understands the order of his spiritual master, he's spiritual master. You know, so any of these people, and he said the GBC can name others. You know, and that's the only reasonable understanding. Now it was misinterpreted because these are Prabhupada's carefully selected, you know, material and spiritual successors. There wasn't anything like that. Prabhupada certainly didn't anoint them. Now people don't want to believe that Prabhupada had anything to do with this. You know, that the whole thing was a fact, that, you know, he wanted his Ritvik system to go on to. Because I think that they think that they have doubts about Prabhupada covertly, but they can't admit. In other words, Prabhupada wouldn't have named these people. If you look at the list, you know, the two of the people on that list, Kirtananda and Hamsaduta, had already been rebuked severely by Prabhupada that year for receiving Guru Puja before Prabhupada was gone. He knew it. He said it was a premature attempt. He understood that there were already people who wanted his position. He knew it. Why then did he name them? You know, he couldn't have done it, must have been a conspiracy. But I understand, at least if you look at it from what, I mean, Hamsaduta and Kirtananda, to name two people, well, we're going to initiate disciples anyway, no matter what Prabhupada said. by naming Kirtananda, you know, we put off a split for 10 years. We were much able to deal with New Vrindavan's going off in 1987 than we would have been able to deal with it in 1977. It seems to me that's the way, at least I understand it. I can't fully enter into his mind, but if you look at the position, he knew that these people, I mean, Prabhupada knew people. I mean, it is a fact that Prabhupada understood what was in people's hearts very, very well. And he was not fooled, he wasn't bedazzled, he wasn't cozened, conned, or anything like that. And the other thing is if you look at it, these were Prabhupada's best people. They really were. They were his best leaders. And when I see godbrothers, you know, who want to blame the whole thing on these things, these people, you know, I have to say, as I said to myself, why wasn't I any better? How can you blame them? If they were his best men and they're not good enough, then we should have been better. You know, they were his best men. It's too bad they weren't better. But they were, in fact, his best people. And so, you know, this is what was going on in those days. So I we are still working out the same problems. Not only on institutional, but the main problem is the sex desire problem, which has got to be dealt with. Yeah.
It seems that there was some initial followers of Kamsadura, and then the GBC started going to Shuddhaswami.
Yeah.
That's what really kicked. Because they were confused. What do we do? And it could have gone, and that was a chance to maybe go back to maybe a more humble position for the gurus.
Yeah. He didn't. When there was difficulty initially with some of the gurus, the GBC tried to take care of them. They went to Sridhar Maharaj. He supported the gurus over against the GBC. That's what he did. They don't. How can they do this to you? You're a Prabhupada's man, you know, so on and so forth. And when the GBC finally removed Jayatirtha because it found out he was taking LSD, Jayatirtha went to Sridhar Maharaj and also got support. And that's when, you know, the whole thing split between Sridhar Maharaj and ISKCON. So, I think ISKCON became an impossible position in those days. As far as Sridhar Maharaj goes, as far as Prabhupada and his godbrothers, or even today to Narayan Maharaj, it's not that I think that the GBC made a mistake with Sridhar Maharaj, and I think some people have made a mistake with Narayan Maharaj, that is demonizing them because they've come into conflict with ISKCON. I can perfectly well believe that people like Sridhar Maharaj are very advanced devotees. They're going back to Godhead, that they have a rasa with Krishna, that they're residents of, you know, eternal residence in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela. That's one qualification. But I think there's another qualification, and maybe even a greater qualification even than that, and that's the qualification to know how to take the Sankirtan movement the next step forward. I think Prabhupada had this qualification, and I don't think anybody else in the whole Gaudiya Math except Prabhupada had it. And that's the issue as far as those things go.
He actually had to move to Bhaktisiddhanta.
Yeah, he hadn't. That's right. That's what Prabhupada said. So I don't think we have to be envious about these other people or blaspheme them or say they're not going back to Godhead or saying they're not great devotees. We may be in a conflict over the ways and means to spread Krishna consciousness, but I'm convinced that the qualification to do that has come from one person and one person only. The order to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, it was actually spread, given by Bhaktisiddhanta fairly liberally. With the order of the spiritual master comes the mercy to execute it, and there's only one person who executed it. This offenses that were created against Sri Ram Maharaj and so on, that's another thing. I mean, there was a lot of part on our part when it fell out. But it is a fact that he didn't have the qualification to give us the right advice under those circumstances. There are other things he may have been able to give us good advice on, but it's very hard when you go to somebody's advice and accept them as authority, this I accept and this I don't accept. Yeah. It seems to be a package, you know, the whole thing, or not at all. But anyway, this was ISKCON's problem. When we actually came to the level of guru reform, you know, it seemed to me that the most effective thing that we could do was at least establish the position of the GBC that apparently Prabhupada wanted, and the position of guru in relationship to the GBC. There are other people that want to get rid of, you know, want to take advantage of the situation. You know, this was way back when, you know, in the days of 84, 85, in the guru reform movement, you know, there was a grunt bunch of people that really wanted to get rid of guru altogether as much as possible. And these same people are now going on as the Ritvik people. You know, and I didn't think we had that option. You know, that's not our option. I thought if we just rectified, you know, the relationship between the gurus and the GBC. We cannot interfere with a proper relationship between guru and spiritual master. That's given in Shastra and has to be in a certain way. You can't. And part of the Ritvik thing is a covert device to allow people to go on being gurus while sinning. Because now I'll be your guru, I'll be a leader, I'll give you orders and everything like that. But then don't expect me to follow the principles, or, you know, because I'm just a Ritvik. Prabhupada's your guru. So, you know, when I want to be on your guru, when it's not convenient, then Prabhupada is. You turn the movement into a basic, everybody's off the hook for making spiritual advancement. Yeah.
It seems that seems to be a little bit of an illusion that some of us fall into, that take shelter of a member of the Guru enough to think that somehow or other that connection with Prabhupada is in any way affected by that. Whereas that just doesn't ring true to me. They're following a completely different pattern of sadhana or of preaching.
That's a whole other topic, and it's a little bit off our subject. GBC put out a whole paper on it. I just saw a 65-page response. This will go on for a long time like that. But as far as the ways and means to practice Krishna consciousness and to spread Krishna consciousness, the person, as far as I'm concerned, who has the qualification to decide those things is Srila Prabhupada. Other people may be great devotees, they may be going back to Godhead, but as far as knowing what do you need to do to have a movement that's capable of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, under these times and under these places, it's Prabhupada. He came to the West, he made the decisions. How many rounds you should chant? What kind of what our sadhana should be, what our preaching should be. All these things were decided by Prabhupada. In many cases, they were decided by Bhaktisiddhanta. And Prabhupada said, you know, that the one thing to his credit is he always remained the servant. He never tried to become the master. And I accept that evaluation. And so I, at least I have this confidence in Srila Prabhupada. But as far as our movement goes now, I think in one thing, it's time for everybody to get their act together on whatever platform it is. Maybe it's back to grahasthas again. Well, you know, if the grahasthas blew it, then all kinds of people tried to be sannyasis and they blew it. Now we're very cautious about letting people take sannyas. Certainly the grahastha ashram has to get itself together and learn how to operate properly. and the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, everybody has to now fulfill their functions properly. And I'm hoping that the stuff we're learning from Boysen will just be of some help, that we can actually see what's really going on and can at least come to the platform of frankness, so that we can make spiritual progress along this line. We look at our past, we see our mistakes, and we make every effort to correct them. And so long as we're honestly trying to correct them, then everything will go forward. But unfortunately, you know, under the Dzogchen Acharya, it became a kind of official structures of bluffing. You know? And that people thought now they had to be on some big high platform they weren't actually on, and we're going to make up the sense of failure by becoming various kinds of bluffings and all these other concealment mechanisms that really is not will not lead us anywhere. So, Dami?
On the point about the thing, I heard you speak before how sort of makes the whole controversy relevant, in the sense you said that if Prabhupada were going to make such a big change, he wouldn't have limited to that one conversation anyway.
Oh, yeah. You have to understand that the Rinpoche people have to make Prabhupada be kind of stupid, because they have to say that he didn't know how to give instructions. And I've been there with Prabhupada when he wanted to give instructions to the. I remember one time, call all the GBC together. You know, and all of a sudden people went out, this is in Mayapur, and the room fills with the GBC. And then I watched Prabhupada explain something. And he explained it, you know, from the top to the bottom. This is about people turning their backs to the deities, actually. You know, because what had happened is somebody was showing them pictures of some dancers in Los Angeles, and they were doing a dance performance, and their back was to the deities. See, probably see this nice dance? He probably, why are the backs to the deities? He said. And they said, well, the room is such a way like this. Well, no, the back should not be turned to the deities. And they said, well, you know, there's no other way to do it in Los Angeles. And Prabhupada said, no, the back should not. Who is allows you to say, well, Prabhupada, Jayatirtha, who was the GBC at the time, Jayatirtha said, oh, it is okay. Prabhupada's eyes get big. Jayatirtha. So, Rupa Goswami has said not to turn the backs to the deities. But Jayatirtha has said it is all right. So Jayatirtha has become big, big acharya. That is the trouble with this movement. So many big, big acharyas. Call all the GBC. So then all the GBCs came in, and Prabhupada went through the same thing. But Jayatirtha has said, Jayatirtha was, they couldn't get him. Jayatirtha has said it is all right. He held up the pictures, and then he explained, you know, from top to bottom, from bottom to top, from left to right, and right. Does everybody understand? You do not turn. I've seen Prabhupada give instructions. I remember once when he was in Philadelphia, he gave me instructions how to take some money and do a wire transfer. I've never heard anybody explain anything so clearly in my life, and he had me repeat it back to him to make sure that he understood that I understood it. You know, Prabhupada knew how to give instructions. And when it was something big and major, are you kidding? So what do we do that he's going to, you know, whisper it in some sort of way to somebody he knew, you know, was always put his own spin on things, and you know, and they covered it up. It's just unbelievable. It's just not plausible. You know, it just make Prabhupada incompetent. And he could be fooled by his own disciples like that?
So then how do we react to this whole thing? We just think, well, there's the cheaters and the cheated, and people want to follow the Rinpoches, because we don't have complete control over this situation.
See, I think
the
Rinpoches, you know, you can understand, we've had so many spiritual masters fall down. People are wondering where to place their faith. How do I know where to place my faith? Wouldn't it be nice if we could all have, you know, Srila Prabhupada? You see, they think They think what the Rifi people are looking for is they're looking for somebody that we can surrender to and that we know in advance is not possible for that person to fall down. Just like we did with Prabhupada. Well, how did I know that anyway? How did I, when I took initiation from Prabhupada after living in a temple for 6 months, how did I know he couldn't fall down? Did he tell me that? Nope. He said, I'm always playing to Krishna. Why? How did I know it? Well, it was faith. You know? That was, yeah, it was just faith. That's how, you know, that's how I knew. I had that faith in Prabhupada. Now, people's faith has been broken. They're looking for somebody they can have faith in. But this notion that somebody's going to come that you can know in advance is going to be self-effulgent. You know, they go with this expression, self-effulgent acharya. Self-effulgent to whom? Well, Prabhupada was a self-effulgent acharya. To whom? To his God brothers? Well, no. To whom? Well, his disciples. Self-effulgent means, you know, when you look back, the verdict of history will be, this is the person who emerged self-effulgent. They carried the Sankirtan movement first. Not that you know in advance, oh, see that light? You know? So they're looking for some kind of security, and I can understand that search for the self-effulgent acharya. You know? And so the Rithvik people think there isn't anybody. So meanwhile, you know, then they want to say, well, we'll just take shelter of Prabhupada and he'll be our guru and we can have that. The more proper thing is nobody should get in. You want to say that, you know, you got to have somebody that you can be sure of. Okay, that's your right. Don't get initiated. So the Rithvik people and then the people who are other people, there's the other group, the self-effulgent acharya people. They have the same thing. We need this self-effulgent acharya, somebody. And it's so-and-so or so-and-so. It's Narayan Maharaj or it's Gaura Govinda Maharaj or it's somebody who's, you know, going to... And the same thing, there won't be any more GBC, you know, that group of little wranglers who, you know... it'll be somebody who just is, you know, knows the truth and we can surrender to and will tell us everything we need to know. We can feel secure and all those other things like we did with Prabhupada. You know, that's what people are looking for. It's a kind of nostalgia, really. It's a kind of nostalgia. Well, I don't think we want a system where there's a GBC in place. Now, we want people to be more advanced devotees than perhaps they are. That's a fact. But, you know, you want this, you know, somebody to descend on clouds of glory. That may be... And mostly, what a lot of people are looking for is somebody, the characteristics of a guru that I can have faith in won't fall down is at least 70 years old, Indian, you know, would... I should, you know, well, maybe practically speaking, you're in good shape. But that's not the usual characteristics of a guru, you know, that you look for. Yeah.
This seems like Prabhupada, isn't he mean that this dilemma should immediately initiate a thing? Or it seems like he wants this gradually to be given the appointment.
I don't know if you can tell from that immediately or later on. It was really up to the GBC. Yeah. But you know, by the time the GBC met after Prabhupada's disappearance, Kirtananda had already started accepting disciples. By then, it was too late to wait. Actually, he and maybe Hamsa Dutta, they had already... Because initially the idea was, okay, well, let's wait until the GBC meets in 78, and then we'll decide what to do. By the time that meeting takes place, I know that Kirtananda had already started initiating without permission. Well, it may well have been.
Yeah.
We certainly didn't do it right. But it's certainly wrong to think that Prabhupada wanted this Rithvik thing to continue,
yeah.
You know.
But the devotees were in a state of grief also.
Everyone was very confused. No one was very advanced, really. And devotees were in a state of grief. To me, I think he did amazingly well under the circumstances. Many people thought ISKCON was going to roll over and die. They really did.
Actually, Kirtananda would have started immediately after Prabhupada.
Yeah.
Without waiting.
Yeah, without waiting. He was ahead of time. Yeah.
So you mean to say that those who are followers of Narayana Maharaj Kiska devotees who are followers of Narayana Maharaj are more or less Vihantujimisthi.
Are more or less what?
Vihantujimisthi.
I can't speak for every one of those people. Certainly. But I know that I have direct testimony that within people who follow Narayana Maharaj, GBC Katha, you find fault with the GBC is a major. See, because the Narayana Maharaj people think, Jadarani and some others, their philosophy is that really Prabhupada wanted Narayana Maharaj to be his successor in ISKCON. That he was the one that Narayana Maharaj wanted to lead ISKCON further. They really believe this. I am now convinced that Narayana Maharaj also believes this. And the only thing that stands in the way is the envious, nasty, you know, not advanced GVC. That's definitely preaching that's going on there, and that's the Katha that's taking place. I can't speak for Narayana Maharaj, and I certainly can't speak on, there may be some people in this camp that are not like that. But that's generally, the evils of the GBC and the evils of ISKCON is, Rasa Leela comes second to that in the topics of conversation. It was reported to me in England, people who stayed with them for about 3 days.
Well, just the other night, I was talking to this couple from who is disgruntled with this, and I said, nobody's satisfied with the way things are going on in this kind. I mean, I feel okay, you know?
Well, that's because, you know,
it's the feel like saying why, you know, because then they'd say, how can you be satisfied? This is going on, this is wrong. And I just didn't
want to,
you know...
They were
well, they're socialized with a different group of people. The dissatisfied people all get all together. And everyone means, you know... It's like the French expression, the whole world, you know? Right? What is it? Tout le monde means, you know, six people in Paris. Six families in Paris that the whole world knows, you know? So everybody, you know, means, you know, all your friends. So people, that's the socialized effect. Is we're really running late and also somewhat off the topic. Okay, so tomorrow we'll review the course and tomorrow's Friday's exam. Prabhupada ki jai. This is what's called the penultimate day. The final day is called the ultimate day. The day before the final day is called the penultimate day. And yesterday was the ante-penultimate day. I don't know. We're going to talk about just a little review, get you guys ready for the examination, which will be the same style as last examination. Although I've tried to make it simpler, if not easier. Among other things, I now provide an answer sheet. But it'll be the same style of things. And, you know, some is just to test your recollections on the readings and bhajan. Some your memory of the chart. Some your familiarity with the words we've been using. And some to apply some of the teachings to a situation, a particular situation. But again, it's multiple choice and things like that.
No essay.
Who wants to write an essay? And more, even more pertinently, who wants to read them? No, I think this will get as good a understanding as anything here. So. One thing is, so let me just go over some of the material a little bit. If you look over here, it might do well to look over the previous examination, the midterm, which you should have kept, especially that first part. But one thing that you should... at least remember from this course is, you know, the point of view of social psychology, which sees everything, sees, you know, that the human being is really kind of the internal makeup of one's mental structure reflects the external social structure. So that Boysen is, when he takes different theological terms like sin and God, he gives them a social definition. And there's a couple of examples. One I used on the midterm exam, I think. Yeah. Like this comes from, you have this one, where he has guilt in the like here's the sense of sin, 307. It's in those technical terms and concepts at the end of the first handout. See, like the sense of sin. Now here's the social idea. Denotes the awareness of something within which would be condemned by those with whom he seeks identification. Right? So it's like a social judgment. And which, so long it is not brought out into the open and dealt with correctly, will separate him from their fellowship. Again, a social isolation. See, so that... don't you have there the term guilt somewhere on there?
Oh, guilt.
Yeah. Sin is before that, but he talks about the sense of sin under the heading guilt.
Because he's... Didn't
get that. Oh, you didn't, huh?
That was in the first handout.
In the first handout. Last section, right?
Not there.
In the technical terms and concepts.
Yeah, from the theologian? Well, anyway, so I'll read it to you. Anyway, the idea is to get this, the social sense of the thing. I'll read the sentence again if you don't have it. The sense of sin denotes the awareness of something within which would be condemned by those with whom he seeks identification and which, so long it is not brought out into the open and dealt with correctly, will separate him from their fellowship, the fellowship of those with whom he seeks identification. So in our society, that would be Prabhupada, previous acharyas, one spiritual master, other advanced devotees like that. You want to be accepted into their fellowship. If you've done something that you feel that they would disapprove of, and you just keep it in yourself, then there's the isolation, the estrangement. Yeah.
Is that the view?
Social psychology.
What
about Jed Bard in the deer? He didn't.
This is an example. Do we actually agree with that, or knowing that there is previous life?
Oh, I think it's much more complicated than that. But your previous life will influence the birth you have, which then influence who your parents are. But it's a fact, for example, that we get our idea of God from our parents, our father, our mother, our teachers, because as a child, you're helpless. And if people don't take care of you, you die. So, you know, the parent to a child is an all-powerful figure. And that's why parents, really, in the real course of things, they're natural representatives of God, which is what Boysen says. So, social psychology may not be, certainly not the whole truth about everything, but I just think if you look at it, it sheds light on certain things, where our conscience comes from. Because Prabhupada has talked about, for example, intelligence speaks to us as an authority. It is, in fact, the form direction of the supersoul. And then, we also understand the formation of our intelligence comes from following the order of the spiritual master. So what the supersoul says to us and what the spiritual master says is actually the same thing. But because our intelligence is not well formed in the beginning, we listen to the spiritual master and we internalize his voice, which becomes the voice of conscience. Good is what Prabhupada approves of. Bad is what Prabhupada disapproves of. It's a simple thing. But that's also what's intelligence. Intelligence gives us direction like an authority. But our intelligence is formed from the spiritual master. So I think those things are recognized in that way in our philosophy. I found another interesting quotation to just call to mind. You didn't get this in your handout. But here in a he's talking about the idea of God. And I'll just read this one. He's talking about a particular case, a patient. In his religion, we see the attempt to raise his loyalties and his value judgments to the level of the cosmic. In his idea of God, we see the symbol with which is associated the thought of those whom he counts most worthy of love and honor. The idea of God thus represents to him that in his social life which, that's a complicated construction, we don't talk like that anymore, right? But that in his social life which he feels to be abiding and universal. The idea of God stands to him for that which is supreme in his hierarchy of loyalties. It is the composite image. Composite means put together. It is the composite image of those whose fellowship and approval he seeks. He therefore judges himself by the standards which are imposed upon him by his religion and associated with his idea of God. Right is that which God approves. Wrong is that which God disproves. Self-judgment is ever a social judgment, and the idea of God is the symbol of the collective at its best. That's a pretty nice condensed statement. Now notice the idea of God only goes up to so far. We would say Paramatma. You know, the idea of Krishna, as Prabhupada has told us, the idea of Krishna is greater than the idea of God. Although Krishna is God, the idea of Krishna is greater than the idea of God. So, certainly the idea of God as the super soul and is represented by the spiritual master as God represented. Right? So that's social perspective on things. And in our society, where we have people, figures who are, you know, emblematic, designated, official representatives of God for us, it's even more obvious than it is in most other societies, I think. And socialization in ISKCON, becoming part of the society of ISKCON, is simultaneously socialization, or really simultaneously entering into a transcendental society as we see it, divine society, right?
If the people who are the natural representatives of God, either in our mind or in reality, then misrepresent the person becomes angry at what he perceives as God, then does that make him demoniac, or does he just become covered?
It depends on the person. It depends on the person. Some people are already angry at God and are looking for any excuse, and some people really don't have that and will react in a different way. But certainly we can see it. That's there. Let me add, another thing that we're going to, of course, is going to be on the exam is the new reading we gave. And there's just a couple of highlights, I think, when we talk about the major points that Boysen wants to make about how he deals with counsel, the counseling situation. And from the first essay we read, he says something that should stand out. He says that he says something that he thinks it's the most important lesson for the average minister is, what did he say? Remember?
The art of listening.
The art of listening. Yeah, right. And why is it so important for ministers to stay? Because they like to do the talking themselves. And we discuss that, and we see it in ourselves a lot of times. We got the truth, we want to give it, and we don't have time to listen to people.
What do you do, say, if you're in a temple or some situation, there's a devotee who likes to preach to people, and he doesn't listen, and he won't listen to you. And you can tell he's just putting people off.
Yeah.
What can you do?
Oh, there may be different ways you have to deal with it. If he won't listen at all to you, you know, then you have to make sure he's washing pots at the appropriate time or something else, you know. But if he won't listen to you, find somebody who he will listen to. Yeah. That's the first thing. If you just can't do it, get somebody else that he will listen to.
Because somebody likes to be talking.
And then the other thing that happened on occasion like this is some guest came to me several times, you know, and complained, you know, that, you know, this devotee gets me in a corner all the time and they just talk and talk and, you know, and I don't want to be rude and I don't want to commit an offense. I said, oh, it's no offense, just tell them how you feel. That did the job, you know.
Yeah, give them an eye message.
Yeah, well, an eye message, you just say, you know, really, you know, I come to this feast and I really want to talk to other people. You know, you're monopolizing my time. You know, just put the guy down.
Yeah, there are a lot of times people just don't have a certain
time. Well, it's not foolproof, but sometimes it works, you know. You know. Another thing that in that chapter, Foundations of Spiritual Healing, Boys and Surveys, you know, various kinds of techniques or methods of psychotherapy. And he has a conclusion about it in that chapter, right? He states it right quite in the beginning. And he says, what works is what? Yeah.
Establishing good relationships is more important.
Yeah, personal relations. He says, I read the fact that psychotherapy is far less dependent upon technique meaning, you know, Freudian technique, Jungian technique, Adlerian technique, hypnotic technique, faith healing technique, you know, all these different forms of, whether they're in a religious context or in a clinical context, there are all these different techniques that people have. This is far less dependent upon technique than it is upon the personal relationship between the physician and patient. Whenever the patient has come to trust the physician enough to unburden himself of his problems, and wherever the physician or devotee, he can be counselor, is ready to listen with intelligent sympathy, good results are likely to follow regardless of the correctness or incorrectness of the physician's particular theories or procedures. Right. And as I mentioned before, I wish I'd saved the article now, but there was recently a survey done of psychotherapists in New York and their results by the APA, the American Psychological Association, and they found the same thing. Those people that had good results, it was cut across the boundaries of schools and techniques and just actually depended upon the same factor, which Boysen. He had very good intuitions like this. And he also cites other studies, so...